Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together we get better. In person on January 12th through the 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, food, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories covering all aspects of eating disorders, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups in LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, boutique, shop till you drop, and much, much more. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at the discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website. Act fast. Rooms sell out quickly. Why? There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together we get better.
Welcome to the OA Virtual Kitchen Sink Meeting Podcast. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup at oalaig.org. for information on how to join our meeting live and how to donate to support this meeting and our podcasts. The opinions expressed on the Kitchen Sink podcast are those of the individual speakers and do not represent OA as a whole. And now, our speaker.
Hi, my name is Deborah. I'm a compulsive overeater, vomiter, and drug addict. And I want to thank Vincent for asking me to come here today. I have a funny story. I was talking to a woman I sponsor yesterday, and I don't, you know, part of my recovery is that I don't necessarily go around and tell people I'm speaking at this meeting, come, I'm speaking at this meeting, come. But I was talking to her, and I now live out in the Palm Springs area. I'm no longer in the LA area. And she and I were talking yesterday, and I mentioned that I was speaking at Kitchen Sink. And she says to me, wait a minute, I'm speaking at Kitchen Sink. And I'm like, no, you're not. I'm like, I'm speaking, you know. And then we pulled up the meeting list and realized she's speaking at the in-person meeting and I'm speaking here. So I was like, we were laughing. It's like, we didn't realize that. And it was just a wonderful example of how this program works. And I walked into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous May 15th, 1981. And I like to say that the only two things that I did right were that I kept breathing and that I kept coming back. And it took me 9 years of being here. And in those 9 years, I was in a treatment center twice and long-term women's care. And, you know, and I wasn't like I went to one meeting and said, you guys are all crazy and turned around and left. Okay. It was like, I was at a lot of meetings and I just wasn't getting this. And I'm humbled and grateful and honored to say that in 2023, I celebrated 33 years of continuous abstinence. And along the way, and I do have pictures, which are always helpful. And I stand a little over 5 feet tall and started out looking like this. And that's about 1973. My top weight was about 185 pounds. And then, as I mentioned, I'm a drug addict because I found cocaine, and cocaine, well, this was still on the way up. There we go. Still on the way up. Cocaine helps to look like this. Okay. Because it takes your appetite away and you look crazy in your eyes. That was just nuts. And, lost a lot of weight and, turned into this. And, got sober. So I got sober along the way. And this year I celebrated 40 years of sobriety and 33 years of abstinence. And this is pretty much right before the pandemic. And it's pretty much what I look like now. So that's kind of my story in pictures. So, as I was reading this introduction here, it got to this part where I was like, oh, I asked questions at this meeting. I forgot that. And my palms started sweating and that uncomfortable. That's what I ate over. See, food wasn't the problem. Food was the solution to my uncomfortable everyday feelings. I got uncomfortable when I read here, oh, I have to answer questions, and I got nervous. Food was what I thought was the solution to all my problems. Okay? Food wasn't the solution. Okay? Food was the problem. Okay? My solution is my relationship with my higher power. I grew up in Chicago. I have a few minutes to tell you my story, so to speak, although, you know, you already know it. I'm uncomfortable over my feelings. I eat. I didn't like the weight that I became, so I started throwing up. I didn't like the weight I became and throw up, and cocaine took that away. So I had to find a different solution to my being uncomfortable. And my solution is where I saw it in the book. It tells me in Into Action, which is right before, you know, we often read at meetings on awakening, which starts on page 86, but on the page before, it's an Into Action. And what my action tells me here is I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And my spiritual condition, it means that I have to take actions that lead me away from the ideas in my brain that tell me that they're a good idea. Boy, that sentence didn't make a lot of sense. I was at a meeting before this meeting because I have a commitment at a 7:30 meeting. And the speaker there said, my default is, how do I fix this? How do I figure it out? What do I do to figure it out? That's still my default. How do I figure out the solution to whatever is making me uncomfortable? And as long as I am looking for that solution, I'm not in relationship with my higher power. I'm not in surrender to what the universe has as my idea. I'm only focused on what I think is the best way. And what I think is the best way got me seats in three different 12-step programs because I was putting cocaine up my nose to make me skinny. And the problem, you know, before that I thought that was fixing was the food problem because I was fat. And I knew that if I got thin, I'd have the right boyfriend, the right job. My mother would like me. I wouldn't get fired from jobs anymore because I had several of those. And everything would work out like the, you know, fairy tales. And it didn't. None of those things happened. All I wound up was a fat drug addict because I wound up being able to do cocaine and eat at the same time. So I was just a fat drug addict. And so I had a therapist who was kind enough or whatever, too early in her practice to realize that she shouldn't give her patients her home phone number. And she did. And I called her one night at like 2 o'clock in the morning after a bout of binging and barfing. And she was like, well, I'm really glad you called me, but you're going to have to find another way. You know, why don't you call Overeaters Anonymous? And I called Overeaters Anonymous. And those were the days when you left messages on phone machines because it was 1981. And it was a Thursday night, and Friday morning, bright and early, this perky voice called me. And I don't know how you feel about a perky voice calling you after you've been binging. Hi. I'm like, oh, go away. And this woman told me about a meeting that was at 5:45 in, oddly enough, the doctor's dining room at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in downtown Chicago. And I believe that meeting still exists. And when I visit, I go to that meeting. And I walked into that meeting, and I've never left. And back then, people were not talking about throwing up. But, you know, underneath every bulimic is a compulsive overeater who gathers tremendous amounts of food and eats it. then just doesn't want to. I mean, I was so immature, and I realized as part of my immaturity that I didn't want to accept the consequences of my action. So instead of just putting the food in and keeping it, I took the food back out again because I was irresponsible and didn't know how to be, you know, accountable for my own actions. I didn't want the consequences of those actions. So people weren't talking about it, but I could relate to compulsive overeating. So I just kept coming back. I just kept coming back because I could relate to them, but I wasn't getting abstinent. I probably didn't hear anything about the steps. I don't know about any of you. Have any of you lied your way through therapy, tens of thousands of dollars worth of therapy? You know, it's like I spent all those years in therapy. Did I ever talk about the food or the vomiting? No. It's so much shame around my behaviors about food that I couldn't talk about it. Everything else was the problem. Everything else was the problem. And I was always looking for a solution. I don't know about any of you, but you know, you're buying all that binge food at the grocery store. And at the end of the counter, there's all those magazines that tell you how to lose 10 pounds or take this quiz to find out why your life's not working or, you know, all these things. So you're buying all these things. So you're looking for a solution. Well, you know, people who've heard me share before tell me, I say, this is the original self-help book. There is a chapter here, chapter 2, and the name of that chapter is, ready? Here it is. There is a solution. Okay. And so this chapter tells me what that solution is. And I often like to read, Arlene, I'm sorry, I'm going to read it again. It's like on page 24, it's in italics. And I like to say that it's in italics. When they printed the big book, you know how when we type our documents, we can pick our font and we can italicize and underline with a click of a button. But in the old days, they would typeset by hand and anything that you wanted in italics, you had to pay extra money for. And they didn't have a lot of money back then. So I figured that if they wanted you to really, really want to understand this, they put it in italics and they paid extra for it. So on page 24 in italics, it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink, lost the power of choice in eating. Our so-called willpower, whose mom said to you, just get a little willpower. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the suffering of and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, as a bulimic, 2 hours ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. Me eating a brownie is like getting into a boxing ring with Muhammad Ali. Are you kidding? Like I'm on the mat every time. Every time. And then on page 25, there's those four little words again. There is a solution in italics. And that little paragraph there, it goes on. And, you know, we're really early in the book. It's not talking about steps or solutions or anything like that. It says, but this paragraph is, it's like a mini condensation of the 12 steps. It says, almost none of us like the self-searching. That's step 4. The leveling of our pride. That's and the confession of shortcomings. That's 5, 6, and 7, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others and had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. My life was hopeless, futile. I had bad relationships with my family. I got fired from jobs. I couldn't get to the second date with anybody. My life didn't work. You know, it just didn't work. So then it goes on. When, therefore, we were approached by those people in recovery in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do but pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. And, you know, they are simple. They really are simple, but it requires a tremendous amount of surrender of my own ideas. That back to me figuring out my problems. They're so simple, but I have to admit that I'm powerless over food. Okay. Now, powerless, I am completely powerless, but I'm not helpless, which is what I love about our program. You know, I can't expect God to come in the kitchen and make me an abstinent meal. I have to do that myself. And and all these other things. And I see that my time is getting a little short here. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit to what's going on with me literally today / tomorrow. I'm going to India for almost a little over 3 weeks. And I'm terrified, okay? And many of you know that I have traveled all over the world abstinently, but a lot of it's been on cruise ships and with my husband, which I finally did learn. My sponsor at 16 years told me, you're clean, you're sober, you're abstinent, your relationships with other human beings stink, you need to go to Al-Anon. And in Al-Anon, I learned how to learn to be in relationships with other people. I learned how to get to a second date and a third date and stay in a relationship and get married and stay married. We've been married, we've been together 23 years and married 15. So I've traveled, we've traveled all, and he's a sober alcoholic. We've traveled all over the world and been to places, but he's not coming on this trip. I've been studying yoga with the same yoga teacher for about a little over 30 years. And she takes small groups of students to India, usually in November. And as an occupation, I was a school teacher, so I could never go on these trips. But now I've retired and I'm like, I'm going to India. And I'm like, okay. And I am completely in surrender. I have no idea what my food's going to look like. I have no idea what time my meals are going to be. I have no idea of a lot of anything. And I am preparing food for a 17-hour airplane flight to Singapore. And 12 hours in the Singapore airport, and then flying on 5 more hours to Kolkata and meeting 14 people, none of whom I've ever met except my yoga teacher. And, you know, I am in this complete faith that God hasn't brought me this far to dump me now. And I'm going to, you know, and like I said earlier, I live now out in the Palm Springs area. This starts with me renting a car at noon to drive to the airport. So my head's already, I've got a flat tire and AAA's got to come. I mean, like, I'm into all the, like, these problems that are going to happen between here and LAX. And it's back to that faith. Contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, I can be in surrender. I have the ability to do these things because I work a program of recovery and I'm trying not to figure it out myself. I've checked along the way with other people each of these decisions. So I'm going to finish up here by reading from Dr. Bob's Nightmare. And on page 181 in Dr. Bob's Nightmare, it says here.
You still have 5 minutes. Just want to let you know.
5 minutes. It says.
Yes.
Okay.
I know this is the time before the 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's okay. My phone down here says 9:26. So it's about 4 minutes. Okay. Well, I'm just going to finish up with this anyway, because I'd like to hear from you. Okay. That's enough of me. It says here in Dr. Bob's Nightmare. Okay. It's a wonderful blessing to be relieved of the terrible curse with which I've been afflicted. This is page 180. My health is good and I have regained the self-respect of my colleagues. My home life is ideal and my business is as good as can be expected in these uncertain times. Remember, this was written in the 1930s. I spend a great deal of time, no, probably 1940s. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want it and need it badly. And I do this for 4 reasons. And this is what I really love. 1, it's a sense of duty. 2, it is a pleasure. 3, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took the time to pass it on to me. 4, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. And you know what? I'm going into really uncertain circumstances for myself. I want to take out every single bit of insurance that that I can afford. So this is my second meeting of today, and I'm going on a 4 o'clock meeting this afternoon, and I have a commitment at my 7:30 meeting tomorrow morning. I'm paying those insurance premiums before I get onto that airplane. Okay. And it goes on a little more here. It says, unlike most of our crowd, I did not get over my craving for liquor. I did not much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. I was here 9 years before I got abstinent. It was almost always with me. Okay. It was almost always with me. Today, I have the freedom from the idea that food is going to solve my problem. Okay. What's going to solve my problems today are prayer, meditation, quiet time, calling my sponsor, going to a meeting, picking up that simple kit of spiritual tools laid at my feet. And I'm grateful to say that there are enough toolkits to go around that everybody can have one. And thanks for asking me to share with you this morning. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. Okay, my palms got wet again. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. If you asked a question last week, please wait until the first 3 questions have been asked before raising your hand. And if you have a question, please click on the raise your hand icon.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you so much. Your share was absolutely sensational, brilliant, amazing. Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, before I forget, have a sensational time on your trip. I am so impressed with all the travel. My question is, you said it beautifully, but I'd like you to explain it a little more. When you say, because I have to do this too one day at a time, you say surrender to a higher power. Could you explain or go into a little more detail exactly what your process is to surrender, say, for example, your trip to God, to higher power? What does that mean to you? And how do you work surrender in your life? Thank you.
Thanks for that question. I check my ideas with others. I really have to check my ideas with others. Left to my own devices, I come up with plans and schemes and figure it out. I spent my whole life figuring it out. Like, I heard somewhere, figure it out is not a slogan in this program. It might have been in Al-Anon, but it works for us. Figure it out. And yet I grew up with a mother who the word "we" was an anathema. It was like do it yourself. I grew up in a family of figure it out. And what I have discovered, I have a lifetime history of figure it out created a mess. When I came to ideas on my own, I usually made chaos. So it's a willingness to not think I know all the answers. It's a willingness to ask for help. Okay. The first word of the 12 steps is "we." This is not an I program. And I have to always remember that. And I have to be willing to ask for help. And I have to be willing to look like, I don't know about any of you, but I always like to look like I got it together. I know I got it. And you know what? I need to be willing to say, I don't know. Can you help me with this? It's a really a willingness to not think I know the answers. To not, at first I was going to fly from Palm Springs to LAX. And it was like, wait a minute, that's not the best way. And I talked to some other people and came up with another idea. My first idea is not always the best solution. Doesn't mean I don't have good ideas, but I want to check them with other people. So when I check them with other people and I'm willing to have that humility to not know, I feel it's bringing a higher solution into my life.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Bob.
Yes, thank you, Deborah, for a wonderful share. Do you have a morning routine, a daily routine? And if you so, what is it? Could you please explain it? Thank you.
I'm embarrassed to say, because, you know, everybody has these routines. I don't. I'm a bad morning person. I really don't. I do say the third step prayer, like before I get out of bed, to please be relieved of the bondage of self. You know, it's like, please let me be available for others. I really do not have one of those morning routines. And I will quite honestly admit, I'm a very bad writer. I am not one of the, I'm just, writing has not been part of my solution. Thank goodness there are 8 other tools. I go to a lot of meetings. I go to a tremendous amount of meetings and like basically pretty much daily. So, I know that didn't really answer your question, but I don't have one. I plan my food for the day. My food is always planned. Okay. I have clarity around my food. It's like, I get that out of the way. Today is going to be blah, 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 blah. And I have the willingness to change that if life changes, but I have clarity around my food. My sponsor talks about clarity. So yeah. Vincent.
Thank you, Deborah, for your share. I have a question about relationships. How has the program changed you, and how has that affected your relationships with others?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? How, you know, it's really, wow, that's like the million-dollar question, seriously. I can live alone in my own apartment and be abstinent and keep a job and work a program, throw another person in, and every single one of your character, my character defects is on, like, wow. Like, you're in my way. You didn't clean the kitchen sink. You. I'm like always, you know, all that stuff. Living in relationship with another human being. And I came to this late in life, seriously. And you heard that I married at 56, and it was totally like a newcomer at this. And without the help of, you know, and I know this is an OA meeting, but Al-Anon taught me how to live in relationship with other people. Al-Anon is how to work the 12 steps when there's no substance involved. It reduces the steps to how I interact with other people. And, you know, they have some phrases about staying in your own hula hoop. And I was like, oh God, I hate that. It's like, you know, there's a number of, you know, just like we have our little, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail, and our little phrases and catch things. There's phrases there that, you know, one of my favorites is the word wait. Why am I talking? It's like, you know, I have figured that my mouth, I laughingly say, my mouth has been the cause of all my problems. What I put in my mouth or what came out of my mouth. You know, it's like, so if I keep my mouth shut, all my problems go away. It's like amazing. I don't get fired from jobs. I get to stay in relationships. I don't get fat. And it's like, amazing, close my mouth. Who knew? You know, it's like, but I have found, you know, it's like, I've wanted to say to my husband, you know, go live in the apartment next door, you know, and we'd have a great marriage. You know, it's like learning to live with another person has been the most challenging as well as the most rewarding parts of my recovery. And I thank God for it every day, even though it's really uncomfortable. I live really uncomfortable a lot of the times. So I'm basically a chicken telling another person something. You know, I'm like, and we share a really, really quick little story. When my husband and I first started dating, I taught school and I was on winter break. So it was sort of like, you know, playtime. And I don't drink coffee, and he drinks coffee, and he drank He made coffee one morning and left for work and left the coffee grounds. I hate dealing with coffee grounds. I don't like cleaning it up. And I knew I had to break up with him because I didn't know how to ask this person to clean up their coffee grounds. Okay. I talked to my sponsor, and for a number of years, when I wanted to not necessarily confront, engage in a conversation, I used to have to say to him, my sponsor tells me I have to tell you this. I, honest to God, did not know how to enter a conversation. Judy tells me I have to tell you this. And, you know, he had been married before and he laughed at me, but I did not know how to do this. I did not have these skills. These are some of the skills that the 12 steps has taught me. And I need a graduate school, and Al-Anon was graduate school for me. So I hope that helped a little. Deb in Arizona.
Thanks, Deborah. Wow. I had to rethink my question because Vincent took my question, but that was such a good answer. It was worth it. Can you just talk about acceptance? I mean, you did speak about that, but you know, for me, it's acceptance is the answer. Acceptance is the answer, but wow, there's like just a lot of shit. So can you talk to me about acceptance? Thanks.
I usually have to try about 50 things before I get to acceptance. Acceptance isn't the first. Acceptance is after I've run out of ideas. You know, it's like, we'll go into the doctor's opinion here in the big book, where there's just something here that I just, see if I can find doctor's opinion. Okay. In late 1934, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type that I had come to regard as hopeless. I had to learn that hopeless means out of ideas. And that's when I get to acceptance. I still frequently have to try a lot of my ideas. You know, I have come to discover that I am intelligent. I do have a good brain. I can make good decisions. But they don't always get me to the solutions. And I sometimes have to try a lot of things. And then when I'm broken enough, I'll listen to the people who, you know, give me other, I'll ask someone else. I'll stop being an I and start being that we. You know, it's the we thing again. Hope that helps. Melissa, I think you were before Hope.
Hi, Deborah. Thank you so much for your beautiful share. It was lovely. Can you share with us a little bit about the evolution of your higher power and how that higher power works in your life today, how you connect with that higher power? Thanks.
I think those first 9 years before I got abstinent, I was trying to figure out how God gods. And if I had figured out how God gods, then I like sort of got it. You know, I got this thing figured out. Once again, back to the I figuring this out. And I was at a meeting a very long time, probably more than 30 years ago at this point, where a woman said, and I even remember her name because it just stuck, her name was Shannon. And she said when she stopped trying to figure out what God is and just accepted that God is, everything got easier. I don't have to figure out what God is. I just have to accept that God is. And all of a sudden, when I heard her say that, my shoulders dropped down from my ears. It's like, I don't have to work so hard at this anymore. I just have to accept that God is. I didn't make the trees grow or the tides come in or the mountains that I get to sit here and look at. I just have to accept that I'm not God. And, you know, and then I turned to all of you, God with skin on, or however we want to look at it. You know, if I was meant to be here alone on this planet, God would have had each and every one of us alone on the planet. But since we aren't, I guess we have to live in community with others. And that surrender and my relationship with this higher power, it's just this growing faith that if I'm willing to take direction from those who've gone before me, I'm going to be okay. And I don't have to know what okay looks like. See, that was it. I was always wanted to know what okay looked like before I got there. And today I don't have to know. I just have to have that faith. And is it always there? No. So I just, yeah. It's usually when I start texting people, you know, and then they all answer. And then I'm like, ah, right, not alone.
Hi, Deborah. Good morning. Thank you for your share. And I lived in India for 4 years, and you're going to love it, back in the 80s. I've also been in program a very long time. This month was 46 years. By the grace of God, one day at a time. I also feel that the only thing I've done right is that I've kept coming back. And I want to know if you feel that you have reached what I consider food neutrality, that you're not white knuckling, that, you know, can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, does certain foods still talk to you and pull you, and how do you deal with that?
Oh, they sure do. some more than others. A number of years ago, was diagnosed with a condition called SIBO, which I don't know if anybody knows about. It's called small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. And all of a sudden, what are all sorts of foods that we've all lived on forever were taken away from me. No apples, no pears, no cabbage, no celery, no jicama, no, like the list goes on and on and on. And I was really angry because, you know, I like, you know, you took my cabbage. I can't have cabbage. I can't have eggplant. I can't have asparagus. I can't have mushrooms. I can't have onions. I can't have garlic. It's like all these things. So, and that was 25 years abstinent at that point. And if you don't think I went ballistic, I was like, I cried 4 months in meetings, and people have just seen me weep over this and be angry. It's like, you know, haven't I given up, excuse me, fucking everything already? Now you're going to just take an apple away from me? Are you kidding me? And so I still definitely have feelings around food. And that also brings it up in relationships, because my husband is a complete normie around food. And it's not fair for him to not have certain things. So, you know, do foods call to me? Yes. Do I have to act on it? No. Am I perfect? No. You know, I struggle with nuts. Fortunately, they're one of the things I can have, but they're also one of the things, and I heard Sean talk about that when he talked about his abstinence. Man, nut butters, I could sit there with a spoon in a jar. I mean, like, you know, so I'm having to really lean into my higher power around certain foods and portions and the scale. And I use those things, and they keep me sane and sometimes angry, because it's not that I don't want more. But I come to understand that if the place, I'm willing to look at the place that takes me, and it's down the dark rabbit hole, and I don't want to go there anymore. I really don't want to go there anymore. But, you know, there are four little human beings on the planet that call me grandma. And like, how did that happen? And I don't want to risk those relationships today. The lottery wheel is too high a spin. So they're just not worth it anymore.